Voice of Literacy, where literacy researchers, teachers, principals, parents, and policymakers share and discuss how literacy research informs practice. Join the biweekly podcast and discussion forums. My name is Dr. Betsy Baker, Professor of Literacy Studies at the University of Missouri. This week, we hear from Dr. Debbie Rowe, Associate Professor of Early Childhood Education at Vanderbilt University, co-director of a U.S. Department of Education Early Reading First Project, and the recipient of the 2010 Research Award given annually by the International Reading Association. She does research involving agency, interest, and writing among 2 and 3-year-olds. Welcome, Dr. Rowe.
It's very nice to be here
with
you.
We're glad you're here. First, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got interested in 2 and 3-year-olds and what you mean by agency, interest, and writing at this age level.
Well, I've been working with young children, preschoolers, really since my undergraduate years, and have continued that on up through the university. And really, I got interested in this whole idea of agency and interest just the way most teachers do, and that is I was thinking about the kids that I work with, and there's always some kids who will never come with me and work at the writing table or who always seem to go to the block center. And I started working with a colleague, Corinne Neitzel, who's my co-author on this paper, and she seemed to have part of the answer to that, and that was that children seem to come to play from some different interest positions. You know, they have interests in different topics that make them play in different ways, and I started thinking about what that might mean for writing. So that's how I actually got into this connection between interest and writing for young kids.
So remind me, developmentally, so where are 2 and 3-year-olds in terms of agency and interest? I can imagine, I don't hang out with 2 and 3-year-olds enough. I can imagine I know what they're interested or not interested in, but how much does their expressed interest really, how do you determine that? What does that developmentally look like?
Yeah, well, you know, I think if you just imagine kids in a preschool classroom, and, you know, preschool classrooms tend to have lots of different choices for kids. There's blocks and puzzles and art and maybe a writing table if they're in my classroom. Lots of different choices for them, and kids get a chance to make selections of what they do there. Teachers will just tell you, oh, yeah, Johnny will always spend time in the blocks center, or Susie loves to go and work the puzzles or whatever. And so children seem to have preferences for play, and Corinne, my colleague, has documented this in a variety of different ways, not just in our own study here, but in other studies she's conducted. It's kind of underlying interest. So they're not talking just about I like dinosaurs or I like rainbows, but instead preferences for ways of acting and ways of playing. This seems to start very early, and, you know, both in our own study as we started to follow these same kids on up through age 5, it seems to be something that sticks with kids. And it doesn't mean they only do those kinds of activities that they're interested in, but it means that they often choose them more than others. So, for instance, you have kids who have what we call socially oriented interests, who really are interested, no matter where they are in the classroom, in kind of being in relation with other kids and with teachers. So when those kids come to the writing center, they want to talk with me. They want to tell all kinds of stories about what happens at home. They want to ask questions about me. They're really interested in being in relationship with me. And if you watch that out all along the room in other areas, they're really doing the same thing with their peers. It's about being with other kids wherever they are. That seems to be kind of the theme for how they interact and play wherever they are.
Yeah. And what kind of things did you find in this study? So you had, I think, 4 different profiles, and that's one of them.
Yeah, that's one of them. So for those kids, you know, they were very interesting, kind of surprising, the socially oriented kids, because I really had thought, I had expected to see that what they would be doing would always seem to have a social theme with writing. Maybe they'd be exchanging messages or something like that. And they did do a good deal of that. But what was interesting was they actually had the most varied profiles. And when I went back and looked at the video really closely, it turns out that they'll do whatever their friends are doing. So they're more flexible than some other kids. And so when they are with other kids, they'll do whatever they're doing. So if they're playing with a kid who's kind of what we call a procedural kid, those kids seem to really kind of want to understand how do things work. You know, so if they're out in and they want to do it right. They want to be able to know how the procedures work and how do I do this the way it's supposed to be done. So they're the kids that want to build the Duplo house exactly like it looks on the box. Right? So when they come to the writing table, those are the kids who really want to figure out how their teachers think print works and how to, you know, they may actually make all these experiences where they choose to copy letters over and over on their own. This is nothing a teacher would initiate, but it's something a child might initiate. So they tend to really want to know how literacy procedures work.
And what were the other two profiles?
The other two were creative kids. Those are the kids who oftentimes teachers find most challenging. And in fact, even in our study, we found those kids most challenging because they tend to want to look for creative and new uses for items and objects and procedures. So, for instance, that's the kid who goes to the writing center, takes the caps off all the markers, sticks them on the ends of all 10 fingers, and now he's got, fingernails, and he can be a monster. So, this sort of a transformative use of materials in ways that you haven't necessarily expected. Or those kids in writing will do all kinds of experiments. Like, they're the kids who take the markers and write first on the whiteboard and try to erase that. Then they write on paper and try to use the whiteboard eraser to erase it. And then they write on the chalkboard, and of course it doesn't come off. So they're trying to see, what happens with properties. They're, very creatively kind of experimenting with materials,
too. Interesting. The fourth profile?
Let's see. So the fourth profile would be conceptually oriented kids, and those are the kids that do seem to have what we think of as a topical interest. That's that kid that, that you think of that no matter what you're talking about, it's always about dinosaurs if he's there. That's his particular interest. And those kids do tend to have topical interests of kinds that we're used to thinking about. In writing with the little kids, when we sit down to write with them, it's really they want to use mark making, if you will, to record their own ideas. Mm-hmm. So they're really not willing to let the adult's ideas lead. You might have an idea of a book you're going to write, but it's going to go in their direction. And I found myself being the subcontractor with those. They say, do this, write this, draw this for me. So, those kids are really, it's kind of all about ideas for those kids.
Yeah. So given these four profiles, are you saying that kids typically fit real well into one of these profiles, or might a kid be all four?
Well, I think all kids try all four all the time. They mix them up. But when we looked at our data, it turns out that, kids tend to prefer one kind of pattern over others. So they'll choose those kinds of activities more than others. It doesn't mean that, for instance, the kid who is procedural never tries experimenting with materials, for example.
Uh-huh.
But at the same time, they're going to spend more of their time than other kids really in these procedural types of activities where they're trying to figure out how print works and how it should look and how you should do it right.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a real variety in what kids and adults probably do as they express their interests in play and in writing. But we do seem to have preferences, and it seems to hold across their play in other areas of the room as well as at the writing center.
Interesting. So now that you've done this study, what can you tell teachers? How does this inform teachers?
Well, in our own thinking about it, we've been really thinking about what this might mean then. It seems like teachers probably have their own interest patterns. For myself, when I go sit at the writing table with kids, my first inclination is to engage in these social sorts of activities. That's just my sort of style there. But I started noticing that there were some kids that would never come to the writing table, and probably because the kinds of things I'm offering there and that are going on there are more socially oriented, and maybe they're not conceptually oriented at all. So that made me think, well, then I better be going, for instance, to wherever they're working on their interest. Maybe that's at the Science Center. And thinking about how I can take writing out to the kinds of experiences that kids are interested in. And so I think you've got to have a wider variety of literacy activities than we sometimes do. I think when I look at my classroom, they almost all reflected my interest pattern, but not the variety of interests that children have. So we're really trying to get teachers to think about their classroom across a day, across a week, across a unit, and think about the variety. Do you have something here that should interest conceptually oriented kids that also can involve reading and writing and so forth? And the same for socially oriented kids and so forth.
Interesting. So is this similar to what you'd tell parents?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think we need to look and see how our children approach things. And you may notice that they approach them just like you do, or that they approach them differently. And I think we want to support our children's interests and kind of follow their lead, which I think most parents are pretty willing to do anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And I think all kids won't walk into the literacy door the same way. So if you can't get kids, if your kid isn't a procedural learner and is not interested in kind of practicing letters, then that's fine. I mean, developmentally, especially for our youngest kids, that's not something I would set up as an activity for them anyway, unless they choose it. So instead, I'm going to let kids pretend their way into writing. Maybe they're the social kid that wants to play restaurant, and you give them a pad and a pencil, and they're willing to kind of pretend their way into writing there, that may be the way they need to enter into literacy.
What are the implications then for people who are providing school leadership, if they're a principal or a school director, and even those who are legislators and passing policy?
Yeah, I think for school directors and school principals, I think there's a real sort of press, even for our younger grade students, for literacy activities to, if I can say this, to look like school, to look like that practicing of letters and that sort of formal literacy. And I think for our youngest children, there's only, you know, there's some kids that are going to choose that and just really bloom in that, and that's our procedural kids. But for kids who have more conceptually oriented interests, you know, we need to see, you know, inquiry science activities going on and literacy involved in that. For our socially oriented kids, we need still to have dramatic play opportunities. For our creative kids, you know, they may express that in a variety of ways. So I think, you know, administrators need to look for a variety of literacy activities. And not to value only those sorts of more conventional, procedural-looking literacy activities, because those are only going to attract strongly a portion of the kids.
So where do you go from here? What research are you doing next or doing now to follow up this study?
Yeah, well, this was a three-year longitudinal study that I published in RRQ that Corinne and I did. And you know, we're still working through the data. Right now, I'm still analyzing some of the data from the 2 and 3 year olds from the first 2 years. But I actually followed these same kids that are in the RRQ article through age 5, and I caught back up with them myself as an ethnographer when they were 4 and 5 year olds. Yeah. So I spent their third year in preschool with them again. So we're going to be looking at these interest patterns and whether they hold or not as children grow older. Yeah. We also devised a variety of instructional activities that we hoped would have this variety that we had just talked about, a variety of opportunities for literacy. And we're analyzing children's responses to those different activities. So
there's sounds
a way to go on that, but that's where we're working.
Sounds great. Dr. Debbie Rowe from Vanderbilt University, we thank you for being with us today.
Oh, thanks very much.
You can find Dr. Rowe's research in Reading Research Quarterly, Volume 45, Issue 2. This podcast is now available from iTunes, Facebook, and Twitter, as well as www.voiceofliteracy.org, where you can find a link to this article and additional work done by Dr. Rowe. We invite you to join online discussions of this and other podcast episodes, peruse a schedule of upcoming topics and guests, and pose questions for those guests. This is the Voice of Literacy.